Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have a great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. For those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And then I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old Mob Deal, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at our current events. First up, before we get started, let me say this. My hat's off to Cory Booker. I'm telling you, for someone to be running into a burning building to save one's life, you know, something like a superhero, if you ask me. Now, I'm not sure if you heard this or got all the details, but it is true. The mayor of New Jersey's largest city went into a burning building and actually saved someone's life. Now, here's what Boston.com had to say. Newark Mayor Cory Booker, speaking on CBS This Morning, described how he returned home Thursday night and saw his neighbor's home engulfed in flames. A woman was screaming that her daughter was still inside. The mayor's security detail tried to drag him away, but Booker told them that the woman was going to die. Now, Detective Alex Rodriguez told CBS, without thinking twice, he ran into the flames and rescued this young lady. Now, Booker, 42, an up-and-coming Democratic politician who has been mentioned as a possible future candidate for governor, said he feared for his life as the kitchen erupted into flames and he couldn't find the woman. The woman called out, he said, and Booker grabbed her from a bed and threw her over his shoulder. I punched through the kitchen and the flames, and that's when I saw Detective Rodriguez. He grabbed her as well, and we got her down the stairs, and we both just collapsed outside, Booker said. Now, the mayor described this as a come-to-Jesus moment. Now, of course, in Mark 12:31, it says, love thy neighbor as thyself. So I think he's following the tenets of what Jesus is talking about here. And it is unbelievable that he was able to do that. So, again, hats off to Cory Booker. Again, you know, it's very seldom that people will risk their own life to go to saving somebody else, let alone run into a burning building. But for the most part, again, hats off to Cory Booker. I think that was an outstanding job, and you know, I think great things have come of it. So let's shift now to Trayvon Martin. Now, there's a new twist in the Trayvon Martin case. Now, I don't know if I'm going to say what my mom used to tell me. Something in the milk about this case ain't clean. So if you look at Reuters.com, here's what they had to say. A special prosecutor in Florida charged Neighborhood Watch volunteer George Zimmerman with second-degree murder on Wednesday in the shooting death of an unarmed black teenager, Trayvon Martin. A move that prosecutors have been demanding for weeks in the racially charged case. Now, Zimmerman was under arrest at an undisclosed location in Florida. Special prosecutor Angela Corey's decision came 45 days after the fatal shooting in a quiet, gated community. Now, she goes on to say, I can tell you we did not come to this decision lightly. Let me emphasize that we do not prosecute by public pressure or by petition. We prosecute based on the facts of any given case as well as the laws of the state of Florida. Now, the decision on whether to charge Zimmerman for the death of Martin, 17, had rested with Corey since she was appointed by Florida's governor on March the 22nd. The firestorm of protests forced Stanford's police chief to step aside and had the regularly assigned prosecutor to remove himself from the case on March 22nd, leading to Corey's appointment. But here's the twist. Now, again, some in the milk ain't clean about this case. But at any rate, the Florida judge overseeing the second-degree murder case involving George Zimmerman says she may have a conflict of interest. Now, mind you, this has been going on for quite some time, you know, and now she gets appointed to this particular case, and she says that it may be a conflict of interest. Now, her name is Circuit Judge Jessica Rexheimer. Now, she said Friday during a hearing in Sanford, Florida, that her husband works with an attorney who referred Zimmerman to his current defense attorney. It's my understanding that Mr. Zimmerman had contacted Mark Nijami to represent him prior to you, Mr. Omari. As I have disclosed previously, my husband worked with Mark Nijami. And the lawyer who made that referral, Mark Nijami, is a well-known Orlando defense attorney who is serving as CNN commentator on the case. Now, again, the circuit judge, Jessica Rexheimer, is now presiding over a case in which her husband is involved tangentially. Now, I want you to hear the report. Listen to this interview. Listen to what she had to say.
You can count on.
Developing at 5, George Zimmerman's case has already hit a snag before it even started.
If you choose to file a motion to disqualify me,
the judge who's supposed to preside over this incredibly high-profile issue is worried she has a conflict of interest. Judge Jessica Rexheimer said her husband works in the same firm as newly hired CNN analyst Mark Nijane. He's the attorney who recommended Mark O'Mara to the Zimmerman family.
Channel 9's Darlene Jones learned O'Mara said he will decide no later than Monday whether he will file a motion for the judge to be removed. Darlene, is this a legitimate conflict of interest, or is this judge passing on a case that some would consider too hot to handle?
So, Marty, some legal experts say it is a legitimate claim because you don't ever want a client to come back and say they did not get a fair trial because of any real or perceived conflicts. The second-degree murder case against George Zimmerman is a long way from going to trial, and already there is drama in the courtroom.
Mr. Zimmerman had contacted Mark Nijane to represent him prior to you, Mr. O'Mara. As I've disclosed previously, my husband worked with Mark Nijane.
George Zimmerman initially contacted Mark Nijane's law office a month ago. Nijane has represented Tiger Woods and Casey Anthony's parents, but Nijane declined to represent Zimmerman for personal reasons and referred him to 5 attorneys, including Mark O'Mara. But Judge Jessica Rexheimer's husband is a partner and civil attorney in Nijane's office, so there's a concern the two could have discussed the case.
But O'Meara said he's also worried about an agreement Nijem has with either George Zimmerman or his family that gives him the authority to talk about the case on his behalf. And Nijem is now a legal analyst on the case for CNN.
Mr. Nijem is going to be extraordinarily active in how he both perceives and analyzes this case.
Judge Rex Seidler has been a judge 9 months, and court officials said she was chosen at random to oversee the trial. And it doesn't sound like she has any plans to recuse herself from the case, which she can do voluntarily.
If you do or choose to file a motion to disqualify me as the judge, of course, Mr. O'Meara, you realize that has to be filed in writing.
Zimmerman's attorney said he will decide over the weekend whether to file that motion to have this judge disqualified. Reporting live in Seminole County in Sanford, Darlene Jones, Channel 9 Eyewitness News.
Okay. So if you listen at the language that was used in the case, you would understand that the judge, Rex Seidler, has the opportunity to recuse herself. But she asked the attorney, who's representing Zimmerman, if he wanted her removed, he had to file it in writing. What's that all about? Why is it that he has to file it in writing as opposed to her recusing herself? Because obviously her husband worked for the same firm that recommended Zimmerman's attorney. Now, let me kind of break it down for you. As a husband and wife team, one's a judge, one's an attorney, and I recommend that someone, a friend of mine, represents this guy because my wife is presiding over the case. Is this fair? Is this just another cover-up of judges and lawyers involved in this case? 323-580-5712 is the number to dial. 323-580-5712 is the number to dial. I also want to talk about something that's near and dear to my heart. Some daddy issues associated with Mitt Romney. Now, in just a few minutes, we're going to take a break, and I'm going to tell you why I think these daddy issues are going to have a tremendous impact on this presidential election. A tremendous impact on this presidential election. You don't need to slip on this one. But it's time for a break. But when we return, we're going to open up the phone lines and hear from you. Stay tuned. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and AskGema, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my East Point.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, in just a few minutes, we are going to open up the phone lines. But before we do that, joining me live in the studio is the executive producer and the chief operating officer of TaylorMade Training and Consulting. Now, she will be joining us in just a few minutes, but before we bring her on, I want to talk a little bit about daddy issues. Now, I said earlier that, of course, Mitt Romney is going to be the GOP nominee. That's pretty much given, right? And he has been really at this for quite some time. Now, when you look at the past few presidents, most of them had some real big daddy issues. Now, let me read for you what Paul Waldem wrote earlier this year. He said, "The last few presidents have all had father issues, in which I'm calling daddy issues, of one sort or another. Barack Obama wrote a whole book about his struggles to form his identity with the shadow of a father, of course, that whom he met only a couple of times. Now, if we look at Bill Clinton, never knew his biological father. And one of the key moments of his youth was when he stood up to his abusive stepfather to defend his mother. And in what is the some way a parallel with Romney, George W. Bush spent much of his life defining himself as not like his father. George H.W. was patrician. George W. was down home. H.W. was an achiever. W. was screwed up. But unlike Mitt Romney, George W. Bush confronted his father directly, even challenging him to a first fist fight. You want to go mano a mano right here? After driving home drunk and knocking over the neighbor's garbage can. And I bring this up because the daddy issues, obviously, for these last four presidents we just talked about, is going to have a profound impact on this year's election. Now, when people look at Barack Obama and how he's engaged in all the wonderful things that he's done over the last 3 years and the fact that he's pretty much a shoe-in, and I've, in fact, said it myself, that I thought he was going to be running on the polls because there wasn't a lot of Republicans that I thought that could really challenge him with any type of legitimacy. But it turns out that a lot of times what impacts a person is these deep entrenched daddy issues. And obviously we just talked about, gave some examples of a few that presidents has had them. And so Mitt Romney comes with his own daddy issues. And so if you look at the facts that Mitt Romney's father ran for president and didn't win, it seems to me that Mitt Romney is going to do everything he can to avenge his father, to make sure the Romney name gets that presidential bid. So we have to be very careful and watch what's happening over the next several months and days, because it is my opinion that Mitt Romney is willing to spend every single dime he has for the Romney name. Now, let me give you some examples on what's happening here. And I don't know if you, a lot of you know a lot about Mitt Romney's father, but I want to read for you here again from an article written by Paul Wadman sometime earlier this year. And he saw things as the same, similarly than that I'm seeing them now. And so it's kind of refreshing to see this confirmation. But here's what he writes. He says, Mitt Romney's daddy issues. He's got them, just like most of our recent presidents. It isn't easy getting a read on what motivates Mitt Romney. He's always polished and prepped, his square jaw firmly in place, and every word carefully planned and delivered as though it were part of a 57-slide PowerPoint presentation. He married his high school sweetheart and raised a gaggle of strapping boys, not a rebellious one among them, so far as we can see anyway. He has no visible vices. When he's frustrated, he gives a fake laugh. He never seems to get sad or angry. In short, it's hard to discern what turns the wheels inside him. But those who try are homing on Romney's relationship with his father, George Romney. Car company CEO, governor of Michigan, and failed presidential candidate. Now, pay close attention to this piece, the failed presidential candidate piece. And two of the smartest commentators around, Rick Perlstein and Michael Tomasky, have come to the same conclusion about the relationship amidst political choices to what he saw happen to George's political career and his presidential bid in particular. Here's Perlstein describing the kind of political politician George Romney was. Now, if you pay close attention, you're going to find that there's a very stark contrast in George Romney's approach and Mitt Romney's approach. And Mitt Romney, of course, is one who's really wanted to avenge his father's name, in my opinion. And he's looked at his father's bid for the president. He's going to try to tweak and change and mold his particular political campaign around what his father did. Instead of making the same mistakes that his father made, he's going to try to do the exact opposite. So pay a close attention to how George Romney ran his campaign and see if you can draw a parallel between what Mitt Romney is doing vis-a-vis what George Romney did. Here's what Perlstein writes. His calling card was his shocking authenticity, his courage in sticking to his positions without fear or favor was extraordinary. In January of 1964, for example, the second-year governor, we're talking about George Romney here, received a letter from a member of the top Mormon governing body reminding of the teachings of the prophet Joseph Smith that the Lord had placed a curse upon the Negro. Drop your support for the 1964 Civil Rights Bill, the elder warned, arguing that God might literally strike Romney dead for his apostasy. I just don't think we can get around the Lord's position in relation to the Negro without punishment for our acts, the letter said. Romney, George Romney that is, only redoubled his commitment, leading a march the next year down the center of Detroit in solidarity with Martin Luther King Jr.'s Martyrs for Voting Rights in Selma, Alabama. In 1966, the Republican Party staked its electoral fortunes on opposing open housing for blacks. George Romney begged them unsuccessfully not to. And of course, George Romney's 1968 presidential campaign unraveled after he committed an overblown gaffe, saying that he had been brainwashed by generals and diplomats in Vietnam into thinking the war was going great when it wasn't. Mitt learned at an impressionable age, Perlstein writes, that in politics, authenticity kills. It must be particularly painful for him after trying so hard to avoid a gaffe like the one that destroyed his father's campaign to find himself committing one gaffe after another. So if you watch this very closely, you'll see why Romney chooses his words so carefully. Perlstein continues by saying, "And that's not all. As CEO of American Motors, George Romney would give back part of his salary and bonuses to the company when he thought they were too high. He offered a pioneering profit-sharing plan to his employees." This is George Romney, y'all. Most strikingly asked about the idea that rugged individualism was the key to America's success, he snapped back, "It's nothing but a political banner to cover up greed." Now, obviously, the difference in their approach, George versus Mitt, is a potentially fascinating topic. But what concerns us most is the political. And there's an important point about ideology that should be kept in mind when we watch Romney move to center of the general election. Now, there is no real Romney, ideologically speaking. That's true to varying degrees of many politicians. They have beliefs, but those beliefs will always be subject to adaptation and compromise depending on what the political possible or necessary is. It just happened to be more true of Romney than almost anyone else. Now, commentators have spent countless hours speculating whether Romney is really moderate or really conservative. The answer is that he is neither and both. The lessons he learned from watching his father fail to make it to the White House are: don't stick to your guns, be flexible, suit the needs of the moment. And so, in order to complete his father's unfulfilled destiny, he has decided to become his father's opposite. So if you can pay close attention to what's happening with Mitt Romney as he continues to flip-flop, i.e. The flexibility, as you see him to continue to move very cautiously through the campaign trail by watching his word, or should I say measuring his comments. For example, he was asked about the Ledbetter Act, and he did not, nor did his campaign people give a comment because he wants to choose his words carefully, because he know his father made a gaffe after another gaffe, and it pretty much took his campaign down. So the daddy issues, as you can see, has a profound impact on what's happening with our presidential politics. It actually shows you what motivates these men to become president or to fight to become president. And so I say this to remind everyone that you look back to what Bush did when he was in the White House and how he was influenced by Saddam Hussein trying to kill his father during the first Gulf War. George Bush felt like he wanted to finish what his father did not. So therefore, we went into the Gulf War. It is also my opinion that Mitt Romney wants to finish what his father did not. That means he's built this empire of cash, empire of business contacts, empire of all these different resources to take the presidency at all costs, literally and figuratively. I tell you people, again, we really need to pay close attention to this election. Mitt Romney has a strategy, unlike one you've seen before. There will be billions of dollars spent on this campaign. There will be millions of dollars spent on advertising, millions of dollars of lying and cheating and stealing and positioning and posturing. And so it is very incumbent upon each and every listener out there to make sure that they are going to be doing what is necessary to make sure that their vote counts. Here in the state of Texas, we have not received our voter's registration card. There are rumors going around about the expiration is expiring sometime early next week. There are rumors are going around that we may not get them in the mail at all. And if you don't go down there and check yourself, and you know, like they've been doing for the past couple of years, sending them to you in the mail, you may not be eligible to vote this time. As you can see, they're doing a lot of redistricting. Now there's a lot of voter ID laws that have been changing. And then all of this money associated with the super PACs. There is a lot going on. We really need to pay close attention. 323-580-5712 is the number to dial. 323-580-5712 is the number to dial. I need you to weigh in on this, people. We're going to open up the phone lines, and we're going to bring Jima on the line when we come back. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East Boone friend.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. In just a few minutes, we're going to open up the phone lines and take your calls. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Okay, so I was talking a little bit about the daddy issues associated with Mitt Romney. What do you think about that? Do you think that Mitt Romney has some daddy issues? Do you think that Mitt Romney is going to buy the presidency? You know, he has pretty much an unlimited amount of cash. And, of course, you know, there's nothing that he pretty much can't buy. And I also heard this week that he came out and kind of supported just recently mothers working at home, and because his wife was attacked. You know, she works at home. They're millionaires, and she raised 5 boys. And he talked about how basically dignified that was for her to do it because she's rich. But when you look at the fact that there are he came out a few months ago and said, you know, about losing your dignity if you're not working at home, it really sparked a lot of controversy because on the one hand, he said that if you have a two-year-old, you should be able to go out and get daycare for your child. And then once you get daycare for your child, you should be able to, at some point, get out and get your dignity by going out and working. So, of course, it's in the context of dealing with, you know, the less fortunate, you know, the poor, people that are maybe don't have the dollars or maybe even single moms. But again, he's talking about them losing their dignity if they're not working. But yet, when it applies to his wife, she's dignified when she stays at home and she takes care of her five boys. So why is it then there's a double standard when it comes to dealing with this issue with Rami? Again, you know, I go back to the daddy issues, the fact that, yes, it was Mitt Romney, his father, you know, staying true to his particular cause. But here we have Mitt Romney flip-flopping, you know, always taking the position of now as opposed to sticking to his convictions. What do you think about that? 323-580-5712. 323-580-5712 is the number to dial. And I tell you, it is very interesting to see how he's posturing himself to kind of defend his wife when it comes to working at home, but he's not willing to defend poor people. You know, it's always a war on poor people. It is the poor people are the scapegoat of American society. It is where they dump their waste. It is where they use or position themselves to take away money from those that are poor and shift those dollars to other places. Now, mind you, we are the richest nation in the world. Why is it that we are experiencing this type of behavior? You know, it's really, really sad. Really, really sad. At any rate, we're going to go ahead and bring on the executive producer of Current Events and the chief operating officer for TaylorMade Training and Consulting. I introduce to some and present to others, Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Good evening.
Now, of course, it's always a pleasure to have you on. I want to talk for a minute about Cory Booker. First, I want to ask you, what do you think about him going into a burning building and saving this woman?
Well, I've always liked Cory Booker because he's always seemed like such a people mayor in terms of living where he lives, doing the things that he does in the community. You've seen him in snowstorms out shoveling people's snow. So, you know, on the one hand, I'm not that surprised that, you know, his instinct kicked in and he would just run into a burning building to save people because, as he states, these are my neighbors. I've lived next to these people for 6 years. I know them. You know, they keep me inspired and motivated. So he knew the people. It wasn't like they were strangers. But I think he would have ran in the building if they were strangers just because that's the type of person he is. So, I mean, you know, I was shocked because you don't hear that, and I don't think we've heard enough about it this week. But you definitely don't hear that about our politicians putting themselves on the line physically to really go out and help somebody that was in need at that moment. It wasn't a need she was going to have 2 weeks from now. She needed some help right now. So you don't hear that often.
You know, and the fact that he fought the security guard to actually get into the building, and you know, and of course he has a detail, what they call a security detail, and of course the security detail is the responsibility to save his life or to make sure he doesn't get in harm's way. But he fought to get through that system. Now, so, you know, a lot of times people focus on the hero. But for me, understanding how God moves and how God works, it seems like the real, not necessarily hero, but the real saving grace is for that little girl he saved, or for the girl he saved, because he was able to fight through his security guard, go through a burning kitchen where, you know, he couldn't even see, and then fight his way back. You know, with her on her bait. I mean, so the real miracle is for her, not necessarily him. What do you think about that?
I agree with that. I mean, the fact that, you know, he saw something, and then the woman was, you know, the mother, who I think is elderly, was stating that her daughter was still in there. Her daughter was still in there. And so here he goes and grabs another, you know, adult woman, you know, to come, and how he had to do it, to go through, you know, the fire, literally, to go through the fire. And for him to admit he was scared, I mean, he didn't try to play like, oh, it's just, you know, like it was something you do every day. You know how people, when they do something miraculous, they give off the attitude that it wasn't that big of a deal. And so the fact that he was like, you know, I was scared, and, you know, I saw Jesus in there a few times. You know, I had my come to Jesus meeting. And then the fact that she's alive, you know, in the midst of all that, I mean, she's burned severely. You know, he was burned on his shirt, you know, as he said, caught the flames for him. But how he had to sling her over his body, you know, she did, you know, suffer some pretty severe burns, I believe. But the fact that she's still here is, you're right, is the miracle. That they both made it out alive is the miracle.
Absolutely. You know, and then, you know, the first thing, and so it was interesting about politicians, right? They try to posture and try to position themselves to be kind of neutral in a lot of cases. But he recognized right away that it was God was his saving grace, and he hesitated initially to say it, but he kept going back to the fact that it was nothing but God that brought him out of that. And so I have a real newfound respect for him, because I'm sure there's a lot of people that would now will bring scrutiny on him for using that language or talking about that. But he recognized right away this was Jesus, because there was no way that he should have made it out of that situation.
Right. Right. Yeah. I agree with that. And the fact, like you say, that he recognizes that it wasn't just him. He was just a vessel that was used to once again, you know, prove to the world that, you know, that God is still in control, and that at the end of the day, you know, what happens is what I allow to happen.
Exactly right. I'm going to go to the phone lines real quick. If you want to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Caller, last four, 3732. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
Yes, this is Mr. Motivator in Dallas.
Hey, Mr. Motivator with the Motivator Show. How's it going?
It's going great. I'm just enjoying you all's show today. And I would like to pose a question. Do you think that because of the situation that you talked about earlier with Zimmerman, do you think that's going to have an effect on our presidential campaign for this election, or do you think it's going to have more an impact on just America on a whole and how we handle our situation with our law and our government?
Well, Jim, I'm going to let you field this question, but I just want to respond with the fact that I think that the president has decided to remove himself from this situation because he knows the impact that race has on this particular case. And then secondly, I would like to say that it is truly Eric Holder's responsibility to really provide oversight and report to the president of his findings. I'm sure there are a lot of meetings that happen off camera that president is really briefed upon and kept up to date with. But I don't think it's going to be his position to come out here and to say a whole lot with Trayvon Martin's case. But we know through his comments a few weeks ago by saying, you know, if I had a son, it would look like Trayvon Martin. That was his nod, if you will, to us that says, hey, I understand. But you have to understand this is an election year, and the fight that I'm in now is just as big as what's going on with Trayvon Martin. Jimmy, you say what?
Well, I agree with that, but I think also what we have to remember is that this particular case, as we know, is just the one that's getting the attention, much like, I hate to keep going back to what happened during the Montgomery bus boycott, but Rosa wasn't the first one didn't want to give up her seat. She was the one that was chosen in terms of how they would proceed. It was her issue that said, okay, it's time now for us to do something. So here we sit now in a similar situation. I mean, in the time that we've known about Trayvon Martin, we've probably heard about 8 different stories of different things that have happened just in the time that we've known about Trayvon Martin.
Oh, yeah.
That's not to discount all the ones that was before Trayvon, right? And so what we've got to do a better job of, and Zimmerman is not the only one, in my opinion, that needs to be on trial. I think that the Sanford Police Department at some point needs to be brought up on some kind of charges.
Yeah, this is
for
true. Yeah,
their complete incompetence. I mean, that was the worst police work I think I've seen in my entire life. And so, you know, I think at the end of the day, whatever happens to Zimmerman happens to Zimmerman. But for those people that live in the city of Sanford, there has to be something done with that police department as well. So we're in the election year. We know everybody is hypersensitive. We can't have a real conversation about race. We never have, and we probably never will, because as I stated a couple weeks ago, to have that conversation, you have to admit that there is still a problem. And you have black people who won't admit that, white people who won't admit that, green people, whatever. So until people admit that there is a problem, then you can't really have a true discussion about how to fix it, because some think that with the election of the president, we fixed that problem, although we know that's not the truth because of the amount, you know, as we stated a couple of weeks ago, the 400% increase in the amount of hate groups that have registered since he's been in office for 3 years. So it touches on a lot, but it forces us to be vigilant in our own lives and our own communities to hold up the banner for what it is that we find to be important in our own lives.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. If you just tuned in, we're joined by Jima Hill Cook, the executive producer of Current Events, and the chief operating officer for TaylorMade Training and Consulting. Now, Jima, this is a good transition because during the monologue, I talked a little bit about the judge and the situation when she has an opportunity to recuse herself from the case because her husband actually recommended the law firm or worked for the law firm that recommended George Zimmerman's attorney. So do you see this as a conflict of interest? And why is it that these subtle nuances keep coming up in this Trayvon Martin case?
I mean, you know, sometimes things just happen as they happen, and you really can't count on everything. Now, had the Sanford Police Department done their job in the beginning, we wouldn't even be here. But then, had they done their job in the beginning, we would not be taking such a hard look at cases that are now popping up all over the country. And so, you know, it's sweet and it's salty at the same time in terms of where we are with Trayvon Martin. As it relates to the judge, you know, I think the fact that her husband firm, not him, but another partner in the firm, Zimmerman had contacted to represent him and they declined but yet offered him someone else. I don't necessarily know if that's that big of a deal unless that attorney got some information and then some kind of way shared it with his wife, which I don't know if that's legal or not, but, you know, things happen in the bedroom. So that's the only way she might know the angle that the defense might be taking, or she may have been privy to some information, maybe not a lot, but enough to cause, you know, maybe the defense attorney to be like, you know, that where the defense attorney might be a little shy in having her sit on and watch the case. So it could go either way. I really don't think it's that big of a deal, honestly, who the judge is in this case. I think the biggest deal is going to be whether or not they can find a jury that will listen to the facts and will devoid themselves of their emotions.
But if this case comes down to the judge to make a ruling, and her husband works for the law firm that is, in essence, defending Zimmerman, to me that seems like it all works in Zimmerman's favor if he has the card stacked in that way. Right, because there could be some information that could be circling around. Now, granted, we have to give the process some respect. We have to believe and trust and believe that, you know, people are going to do the right thing. But the history in this case doesn't give us that confidence that the system is going to work like it should. It doesn't give us. There's not enough evidence in the way that this city has handled this particular case. It gives me a confidence that they're going to be doing the right thing. So I'm kind of leery of this situation happening because I don't know what they've already talked about, let alone what they're going to be talking about in the future.
Right. Well, the thing about it is that it's outside of Sanford already, so it's not there in the same city. That's number one. But number two, I think the fact that she mentioned it herself as opposed to it coming out from the defense, you know, is her being above board, this judge. So I think that in itself speaks volumes because we've known people to know stuff and they just sit back like they don't know nothing. So I think the fact that she actually came out on the front end on Friday fairly quickly, you know, once everything kind of got started and made that statement. So I think that was important. It would have been better had she had this conversation when whoever appointed her to the case and been like, no, I don't think I should do it because of, and then we wouldn't have never even known about all this. So
that's my point.
Like
that's my point.
Right. So that I understand. It would seem as if it would make more sense if they had handled this beforehand, and we would have never known it as the public because it just would have been another judge assigned to the case, and we would have never known anything about her husband and the original firm and all. That's just way too much information for us to have to process, and then it's way too much information for us to have to forget and then determine whether or not it's important or not. So I think that kind of muddled the water. So on that hand, I understand what you're saying. And then, you know, leaving it up to the defense to make that decision also then leaves it up in the end if the defense decides, you know, well, I changed my mind, or I don't know. I don't know how that works in terms of him having to, if he gets to come back later and say he wants her recused, or that could be part of an appeal where the judge had prior information. I mean, who knows? Who knows?
And that's what I mean. All of these things are now stacked in Zimmerman's favor. Right now, he has options. Right, he goes along.
Zimmerman doesn't have any options. I don't think Zimmerman has any options. His options are still the same. The problem is whether or not this particular attorney. I mean, and this is a hard-nosed attorney. He may come off as being, you know, workable and all that, but I really see him as a hard-nosed. I see him as, I'm not going to say sneaky, but he got some sneaky ways about him. And people that sometimes, and you're going to find this funny, but people that say things that I know are meant to be condescending and are a judgment, and they see it with a little smirk or a smile on their face, I'm a little weary of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's had a few moments where he's made statements, i.e. either about the family, I'm not going to use that against her, when speaking about the statement Sabrina Fulton made. When he makes those sort of statements with a little, you know, crack on his face and his, you know, little smirk, I'm concerned about people like that because they can be low down and dirty. So I hope,
yeah,
you know, the prosecutor is taking all that into account.
Yeah, I still think that some of the milk ain't clean about the way that she was selected, the fact that her husband is in you know, a part of a major firm that was that gave Zimmerman his attorney, and the fact that there's some rumors out there that now he doesn't have enough money to afford this type of attorney, and so it may be falling taxpayers' hands.
It is. They're saying the state will be paying for his defense. Now, I don't know why he can't get a court-appointed attorney. I haven't figured that out.
See what I'm saying? So it's too
many. I haven't figured out why the state got to pay for this high-priced attorney.
There you go.
When you have court-appointed attorneys, and that's what they do, is they help people who are indigent and can't afford attorneys for themselves. Because I think when you're arrested, they say, I don't know, I've never been arrested, but I've watched enough on TV to say if you can't afford an attorney, one will be afforded to you. I think that's what they say.
Right.
I'm trying to figure out why the state of Florida has to pay for this high-priced attorney when Zimmerman could get a court-appointed attorney and plea or whatever he's going to do.
Herein lies the issue again about her, the judge, having a husband as a part of a high-powered firm that recommended this particular one when he can't afford this type of attorney. And now you're telling me that the state or the taxpayers have to pay for this attorney?
Right.
Unacceptable. Too much is going on.
My son
Something
is
to
killed,
make clean
and
about
I got to pay to defend the man that killed him.
Exactly.
If I'm Sabrina and Tracy.
Exactly right. Something in the milk ain't clean about this particular case, about this particular judge, about this particular attorney. And you know, me and my sister was going back on Facebook about this, and she said on Facebook the other day about how he looks more calm and cool and collected, and how she liked him and things of that nature. And I just reminded her, this case is not about the attorney, but it's about Zimmerman. So he has to put on this face, if you will, to say, hey, you know, I'm not those other guys. I'm not those lunatics. I really have sympathy for the family. I want you to feel sympathy. So now the face of the case become the attorney and not Zimmerman, because he's out there making these statements, showing sympathy for the family and softening people up, when all behind the scenes, he's getting ready to strike like a snake. So we have to be, again, real careful about how this case takes place, because I think if people think this is a shoe-in, there's a lot going on behind the scene, and they're going to work this law to their advantage. I tell you, it is going to be a trip. At any rate, it's time for another break, and when we return, I want to address those daddy issues with Mitt Romney, and I want Jima to weigh in on this time. So we're going to keep the conversation going. Stay tuned. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my East Boone friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Dick Uliano. United Nations observers are heading to Syria to monitor the shaky ceasefire. But as NPR's Grant Clark reports, the UN team is set to arrive tomorrow amid ongoing violence.
The UN team will arrive in the capital, Damascus, in an initial group of six, followed by another 24 monitors in the coming days. The observer mission was approved by a UN resolution passed in a unanimous Security Council vote over the weekend. The Syrian state news agency quotes a military source as saying Syria would stop what it called terrorists from continuing their criminal acts, casting further doubt on whether the shaky ceasefire would hold. Opposition activists say rebel-dominated neighborhoods in the central flashpoint city of Homs are being heavily shelled. They claim at least 11 people have been killed in the military offensive, which reportedly began on Friday. Grant Clark, NPR News, Beirut.
Details are still coming in about the coordinated attacks across Afghanistan today. NPR's Quill Lawrence reports insurgent fighters struck in several places, including the capital, Kabul.
Civilians hid inside their homes near the Afghan Parliament building as Taliban fighters exchanged fire with government forces for several hours. A policeman near the scene said a group of insurgents had climbed to the top of an unfinished building and begun raining gunfire down on the area near the parliament and the Russian embassy. Across town, gunmen used the same tactic near the diplomatic enclave that includes many Western embassies and NATO bases. Afghan officials confirmed at least three such attacks in Kabul, as well as the eastern provinces of Paktia, Logar, and Nangarhar. A Taliban spokesman claimed responsibility for the attacks. Quill Lawrence, NPR News, Kabul.
A major storm system is weakening after spawning more than 100 reported tornadoes across the Midwest and Plains this weekend. At least five people are dead in Woodward, Oklahoma. Hundreds of thousands of families are left without electricity. Search teams have been going door to door in damaged neighborhoods. Presidential summits often end with joint declarations, but not this weekend's Summit of the Americas in Cartagena, Colombia. Because of divisions over Cuba and Argentina's claims to the Falkland Islands, Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos says there's no declaration because there's no consensus. 84-year-old Hall of Fame baseball broadcaster Vin Scully is back in the booth today at Dodger Stadium. Scully missed five games because of a bad cold. It was just the second time in 63 years Scully missed calling the Dodgers' home opener. Scully says his cold was so bad he was, quote, one click from pneumonia. You're listening to NPR News. A British crime blogger, unmasked by the Times of London as a working police detective, has sued the paper for accessing his email. As NPR's David Folkenflik reports, the suit is another legal challenge to the British newspaper wing of Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation.
A lawyer for the Times' parent division disclosed the email hacking in testimony before a wide-ranging judicial inquiry earlier this year. The detective is suing for breach of confidence and on other grounds. The judge leading the inquiry said the Times had misled the court in a related case in 2009. The police have so far arrested more than 40 people with ties to Murdoch's UK tabloids The Sun and The News of the World, which was closed last summer for its central role in the phone hacking and police bribery scandal. Murdoch's Tonia papers have, until now, largely escaped such taint. David Folkenflik, NPR News.
Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner says Republican presidential hopeful Mitt Romney is misleading, saying 92% of the job losses since President Obama took office were lost by women. The statistic is accurate, but the recession began before the president took office, and overall men have lost more jobs than women. Geithner points out the men's job losses in manufacturing and construction came early, the women's job losses followed. Tragedy struck this weekend in San Francisco Bay's large sailing community. One crew member died, four others remain missing today, a day after powerful waves swept them from their boat in a tradition-bound yachting race. It's the first known fatality in the century-old full-crew Farallon's race. I'm Dick Uliano, NPR News in Washington.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, as a reminder, TaylorMade is getting ready for our second annual Hunger-Free Summer Program. Now, this is where we feed hungry children. And there's a couple of things that we do. One, we actually focus on primary and pre-K education. Now, we provide secondary education, but we do understand a lot of teenagers are be out and they're doing summer jobs and things of that nature. But for the ones that do participate in the process, we provide them a lot of good help in science and engineering and technology and mathematics type of education. But at the pre-K level, what we try to concentrate is on reading and just basic sight words and things of that nature. So we had a really, really good success successful time last year, and we're going through it again this time. And so there are three ways that you can help us out. One, go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com, and click on Hunger Free. There, you can make a donation or fill out the volunteer registration form. Now, if you can't do either of those, we would like you to go out to our blog, and that's at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. And so why we ask you to go out there and just click the like button. So as we begin to get more likes, that we can go out to corporations and show them all of the support that we have that support our program and support what we're doing. Even though you can't support it financially, you support what we do. And so we would love for you to go out there and just press the like button. Let us know you're out there. Leave comments out there on the blog to let us know that you do support what we're doing. And we're going to continue this process as long as we can. So just wanted to go out there and remind you, again, that's TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade, Talk Radio, all one word, .blogspot.com. You can also always Google me at Current Events with Patrick Cook. Okay, now, back to the daddy issues. Now, I kind of rambled on about this because I'm really passionate about this because I think in a lot of cases we can really sleep on this issue, right? Sleep on the fact that these daddy issues can really be affecting what a person does and what at least what motivates that person. And so we got our host, co-host Jima on the line, and so we want to get Jima to weigh in on this. Jima, what do you think about these daddy issues affecting these men who run for president, and how do you think it will have an impact on this year's election?
Well, here's the deal, because we're speaking of, you know, Mitt Romney, for sure, who it appears by all what we've seen thus far to be taking the extreme opposite end of issues of things that his father did when he was running for president, or even just how his father lived his life. He's not trying to be his father's protege in that area. So having said that, a lot of what you stated earlier with Mitt trying to be one up on his dad to show the world, although my dad was good, I'm greater, as, you know, we know what Bush did was all in name of, you know, trying to clean up the Bush name, so to speak, since Bush 1 could not get Saddam Hussein, Bush 2 was determined to get them and thus giving the Bush their name back. So, you know, that's how that played out there. And so I just think with Mitt Romney, he's taken such extreme views. He's changed his mind on so many things that he once believed in, that the man, his father, who had strong convictions, whether you liked him or not, you respected that he had strong convictions, and you have a difficult time, I have a difficult time even respecting Mitt Romney because he changes his mind so much. And I'm not sure if he has convictions. I know he has a lot of opinions. I know he has a lot of thoughts and feelings, but I don't know if you build on thoughts and feelings. You build on something that's unshakable and unmovable, and that because it's solid. You know, even Scripture talks about building on a solid foundation. And admit, in my opinion, he's built his brand, he's built his name, or he's built companies, but he's done that by making companies fail and then picking them up. So it's hard to argue with your premise of daddy issues because I agree. You know, a lot of times we won't call it that, especially from a man's point of view, because when we hear daddy issues, it's really usually with daughters.
Right.
Act towards men when they have all they really wanted was the love of their father. So We never really have that discussion as it relates from a man's point of view. But I think on, you know, on some, you know, not that I'm a psychologist, psychiatrist, or whatever, but on some scale, I think there's some validity to your point in Mitt Romney's desire to do something that his father could not do, which, you know, by the time the process is over, he would have gotten farther than his father because he did become the nominee, which is something that even evaded his father. So you know, he can take that as his step of accomplishments. But I doubt in my mind, and not because so much of Mitt Romney, but because people will begin to see the light at the end of the tunnel and know that if we put that light in the hands of a Republican, it's going to run us over. It's going to be a train. It's not going to be a light to guide us through. It's going to be a light to run us over. And so I think people will go out and vote against Mitt Romney just as much as people will go out and vote for President Obama.
You know, and so what was interesting about that is that, you know, we make the assumption that that is the case, that we will go out there and vote for Barack Obama, President Obama, and vote against Mitt Romney, if you will, by not showing up at all. But the caveat here is that the people that think they will be eligible to vote or think they're going to go and vote because they should have the right to vote may be surprised this year. And so when you're talking about you know, disenfranchising or cutting back, you know, a percentage, let's say 8 to 9% of the vote, you know, that could potentially be catastrophic for this election. And so I'm worried that now, because I believe that Mitt Romney will, you know, spend every cent he has to hold his daddy's name up, that we may be in a bad situation this come this November. What do you think?
I think so. No, I think that's been the whole premise, though. I mean, we, you know, cannot play like these wheels haven't been in motion since 2008, the next day after the president was elected. I mean, they didn't even wait to his inauguration before they started some of these wheels, and which is how they were able to do so much damage and how they're able to do so much damage on the state and local level because of the things they started, you know, planting in state systems, which allowed people that didn't go out and vote in 2010 and got all these people in office now. And so when you look at the fact that Republicans are already doing and spending money at astronomical amounts, I mean, when you talk about money, and you alluded to this earlier about will Mitt Romney be able to buy the White House? I don't think he's going to be able to buy it, but he's going to spend a whole lot of money trying to. And so because he has it to do, and that's fine if that's how you want to, you know, spend your money, but I don't think he'll be successful in buying it for the reasons he doesn't have the things that his dad has in terms of compassion and conviction and care and concern. Those are the things. I mean, you know, people don't begrudge you for being rich. You know, I don't have a problem with Mitt Romney's wealth or his success. I have a problem with the fact that it doesn't seem to stand for anything. And so,
yeah.
And I mean, really. And, you know, so, I don't, you know, it's great that you were able to, that you've accomplished all that you've accomplished. I don't begrudge you for that, no more than I begrudge the president who went through life knowing that he wanted to be president, so every decision he's made was about being president. I can't begrudge him because he chose to go to the finer schools and take advantage of the programs that were afforded to him. I can't begrudge him for that, you know, because it worked for him. Now, that might not work for me, but that doesn't mean that. And the difference there also is in him, the president, doing all that he did, you kind of know where he stands on some issues. Some things you're real clear about in terms of where he stands personally. And then there's things that he has to draw the line on politically. You don't know where Mitt Romney is because, you know, and I don't know if you're going to play a clip from this or what he said back in January as it relates to women and working and how soon they need to go back to work and all of that, which is a total flip of what he just said 2 days ago about moms and how important they are, you know.
Yeah, so you're talking about the whole firestorm that Hillary Rosen got when she was on Anderson Cooper, and what she said was, his wife has actually never worked a day in her life. She's never really dealt with the kind of economic issues that a majority of the women in this country are facing in terms of how do we feed our kids, how do we send them to school, and how do we worry, why do we worry about their future. And so he kind of responded to that like, you know, yeah, I'm for work and for mom staying at home. But, you know, a couple of months ago, to your point, he doesn't stand for anything. Here's what he said. At least I think it's coming up here in a minute.
Okay.
So I was wondering, if you're elected president, what would be your plan to limit the amount of welfare and unemployment dependency that our nation is traveling in?
Yeah. A couple of things. I would like to see us have an unemployment system where people had an unemployment account. Where basically, during their career, they're putting money into an unemployment insurance account, and if they become unemployed, they can take money out, and they can use it for education, job training. They could use it for unemployment benefits, and that would give people an incentive to move as quickly as they possibly could back into the workforce. I also like the idea that people who were receiving welfare assistance, have a responsibility of working. In my state, we made good progress in that regard following the days of the Welfare Reform Act, but then when I was governor, 85% of the people on a form of welfare assistance in my state had no work requirement. And I wanted to increase the work requirement. But I said, for instance, that even if you have a child 2 years of age, you need to go to work. Had no work requirement. And I wanted to increase the work requirement. I said, for instance, that even if you have a child 2 years of age, you need to go to work. And people said, well, that's heartless. And I said, no, I'm willing to spend more giving daycare. For instance, that even if you have a child 2 years of age, you need to go to work. And people said, well, that's heartless. And I said, no, I'm willing to spend more giving daycare to allow those parents to go back to work. It'll cost the state more providing that daycare. But I want the individuals to have the dignity of work and get people back into the workforce. I think we have to look at all of our...
Okay, so obviously there was a little technical difficulty there, but for the most part, he said that he would provide daycare or spend a little bit more money on daycare so that people can have the dignity of going back to work. So how is it that, you know, people that cannot afford to go to... or can't afford to be rich don't have any dignity when it comes to going to work, but... someone like Ann Romney, she has all the dignity in the world. Jima, how does that happen?
Right, and as I stated throughout the week, you know, this whole firestorm was much ado about nothing, because there's no part of Ann Romney's story where she can relate to my story. There's no part of it, and so she stayed at home. But with what kind of help does she have? The average woman staying at home raising her kids, she don't have a nanny. She don't have a house cleaner. She don't have, and as Beverly Johnson has, a house manager. You know, she doesn't have any help. You know, so for Ann Romney to even on a small scale say she understands, you know, I'm offended by her statement. I'm more offended by her than Hillary Rosen. I'm offended by the fact that you can have all of that and still consider yourself a stay-at-home mom. And that's a stay-at-home mom, you know, by choice.
Right, absolutely.
You know, you have some that stay at home because it's cheaper to stay home than to try to work a, as you stated, you know, a minimum wage job, and then you having to pay child care because they've cut all the funding for Head Start, things that were free. You know, the same governor that's sitting here want to talk about moms, you're not making it easy for a mother of a two-year-old to go back to work because you've cut the funding for the programs that she could, you know, she would qualify for. So, I mean, that's the, you know, that's the elephant in the room, and we want to dress it up and make it be about something else. That's not what it's about. And like I say, I'm more offended by Ann Romney's statement because there's no way she understands my plight, none whatsoever. And Hillary was right. She has never worked a day in her life. She was right about that. And I don't begrudge her for that, but don't try to act like, you know, you understand what it means to make the hard decision to stay home and raise your kids. Because I want to know what kind of help you had in your house. I want to know who was up at 3 o'clock in the morning, who changing the diapers, who was getting dinner ready for your husband when he came home so everybody could have a well-balanced meal. I want to know if you did all that. Now, if you did all that, Ann Romney, then me and you can have a conversation. But if you had a piece of help more than a day or two of the week, then you can't really talk to me about being a stay-at-home mom.
So why is it then that the Democrats pulled back? Why did they put the reins way back when to Rosen's comment? You know, they pretty much threw her under the bus, basically.
Here's the thing. They listened to the beginning of the statement, and that's all you kept hearing was the beginning of the statement. She's never worked a day in her life. That's all you heard, right? So that's all people latched on to. You stated this on more than one occasion, that the Republicans are masters at spinning a conversation. They have mastered the art of changing the conversation. So here they are once again trying to make this be about moms, and because they were losing the argument on women. I mean, in most polls, the president is up by 19, 20 points over Romney in any woman category. So they're trying to be like, see, she's speaking for the president, which you know, they couldn't win on that argument because she's no way, you know, attached to the president. So they try to make it be that, you know, there's this big thing against, you know, Ann Romney and want to put her out there. So they had to push back, but only because of the first part of the statement. If they listened to the whole thing, which is what you read in terms of she talked about the economic part, she could not understand what an average stay-at-home mom has to go through as it relates to the economy. So when he stands before you and say, Ann tells me what women are talking about, Ann's not telling you what I'm talking about. Ann is telling you what the women in her BRIC circle is talking about.
Right.
She's not telling you about what the average stay-at-home mom is talking about as it relates to taking care of her family, taking care of, you know, of the household, food, and the high price of food. I don't know what movie we were watching. Oh, that last Tyler Perry movie, Good Deeds. And the lady that was in the movie asked him if he knew how much a gallon of milk was.
Right, exactly.
And because,
right,
you remember
right.
that saying, because of his lifestyle, you probably don't know how much a gallon of milk is because you don't pay no attention to it. But when you have to take every dollar and make it count, every cent and make count, you know how much a gallon of milk is. You know how much bread is, and you know when it go up. I'm aware when the block of Velveeta cheese went from $4.98 to $5.88. I saw that incremental change. And as a matter of fact, I kept coming home talking about what is going on that my cheese, that the Velveeta block of cheese is now five something.
Right.
See, so you know that kind of stuff. I guarantee you Ann Romney could not tell me when the cheese went up. There's a lot, and it's funny because I put it out on Facebook, you know, and a lot of people responded. You know why they responded? Because it's something they pay attention to. She wouldn't be able to tell me how long cheese been over $5 because she don't know.
Right.
So you that's know, the, and so for them to take, I mean, but on the political side, they had to say that for the politics of it. And we've got to recognize we are in a highly contested political season. Nothing is going to go without being scrutinized. Nothing is going to go without being dissected. And on some scale, that's good because this is how we find out information. Because our reporters aren't doing their journalistic duties a lot of time. A lot of times they're just, you know, reporting. They're not doing any investigating. And so when we can sit back and we have all this back and forth going on, and then we turn around and, we hear what we hear today from Chris Hayes about what Mitt Romney said just in January. We're not even talking about years ago. We're talking about 4 months ago he made this statement. 3 months ago he made this statement. And yet he want to come out a couple of days ago like he's been down for stay-at-home moms for forever.
You know, that's why it's incumbent upon us to continue this fight, continue to allow social media to be an instrumental part of this process. Whether it's political, whether it's racial, whether it's economical, whatever the cause is, social media is now giving everybody a voice. And so you said it a few minutes ago that journalists are not doing the due diligence in a lot of cases to go the extra mile, to do the investigation, to ask the third question, not just the second question, but the third question to get to the root of the issue. And so it's incumbent upon us to do that. We now can drive the conversation. We can now lead the news by what we do and what we report and what we investigate ourselves, because we're not going to stand down this election. So it's very important for us to make sure we're using social media to our advantage to make sure we do get to the bottom of those issues. And so, speaking to the bottom of an issue, I want to shift the conversation now to the White House Secret Service sex scandal. Now, I don't know if you know about this or not, and Jim, I'm sure you're aware, but the listeners out there, the AP is reporting that an embarrassing scandal involving prostitutes and Secret Service agents deepened Saturday as 11 agents were placed on leave, and the agency designed to protect the President of the United States, President Obama, had to offer regret for the mass overshadowing his diplomatic mission to Latin America. Now, the controversy also expanded to the U.S. military, which announced 5 servicemen members staying at the same hotel as the agents in the Columbia may have been involved in the misconduct as well. Now, of course, I thought that people were going to kind of sweep this under the rug and not do a lot of talking about it. But I looked at Twitter a little while ago, and it was Toure and your boy Roland Martin was going at it about this issue. So why is this a real issue, Jima, or is it?
What part? Which part?
The Secret Service scandal.
Well, let me say this. It's a scandal only because it was a slow news week. And it happened on foreign soil in terms of, and the president was there. And so what were they supposed to be doing, you know, what they were supposed to be doing in terms of getting the place safe and secure for the president. And so that's why it's a scandal, because it's on his watch. I mean, it doesn't matter who is doing it. It is on this president's watch, so it is magnified 10 times more than what it probably would be. And so now, you know, I'm sure some kind of way somebody's going to try to make this be about the president and, you know, his leadership and his this and his that. I'm pretty sure they're going to try to push this, you know, that kind of way. And so I just, you know, it's a scandal in that it happened and how it happened, and because they didn't want to pay somebody, so the girl got mad. I'm just want to know if she got arrested or something. I don't know. But, how did it get out that, you know, they were prostitutes and it was so many of them. I can understand one or two, but 12? That's a high number. I mean, I'm not sure how many people's in his detail, which I'm probably not supposed to know, but 12 seems like a pretty high number of federal agents to be engaging in some illicit behavior, and all of them get busted.
Well, what's interesting is the fact that if it's to me, it looks like, you know, this is probably standard practice. Because they had a protocol in place, looks like, for people to go in and come out and do these things, because otherwise they wouldn't have got in there in the first place. And then to be able to come down and then go and talk to someone about not receiving any payment for her services, or for her services that didn't render, or for unsatisfactory services, or whatever the case may be, for them to be able to go through the entire process of going in, performing an act, and coming out, there has to be protocol in place. So it is my opinion that this is not the first time that this has happened, but it is probably the first time, or one of the first few times, they have been caught doing it. So the question becomes, though,
right,
if you begin now to look at some other things that happened in the past, i.e. the people going into the Salihis, I think they were called, going into the White House and crashing the White House party, right? You look at the fact that this guy shot at the White House and he was able to get away and be gone for a few days. And you look at the fact that this governor sticking her finger in the president's face. It seems like to me there's a breakdown somewhere. Now, it may not be in this detail, but there's been a consistent pattern with this Secret Service detail of not protecting the president like he should, in my opinion. Because there's no way those three things should have happened. And this has just been 3 years. It's not like he'd been in the White House for a full 4 years yet. And all
right,
these issues come up. So, you know, of course, I think it's good that they finally going to switch these people out, because I don't think they've been doing their job in the first place. I had said back a few months ago, it's time for him to get the fruit on his team anyway.
And I'm going to say he probably will second term. He got, you know, he just got to stay kind of even keel. He don't want to scare too many people too fast. So, you know, just give him time. You know, you'll start seeing a few more pop up than what you normally see. You'll be like, dang, you know, so. But you got to, you know, the photo ops got to look right for everybody. So, you know.
Well, good, good. So now to the second part of the question about Torrey and Roland Martin, they going back and forth. What's this all about? Is there some underlying issue they got going on? It's just good conversation.
No, it's just good conversation with them too, because you have two, in my opinion, egomaniacs who just love to banter, and for the most part, highly intelligent brothers, you know, who stand strong in their convictions. And when they have a point to prove, they will drill it down until they either convince you that they're right or at least got you second-guessing your own opinion. So that's just who those two are. I mean, any given day, you see earlier he was going back and forth with Karen Hunter on the New York Knicks. That's, you know, Roland Martin. So in any given day, you'll see him going in a back and forth with somebody about something. So I don't think that one's that one's anything we got to be concerned about.
Okay, so let's shift now to...
Can I go back to something right quick?
Sure,
because,
sure.
You know, the beauty of technology. And when we were talking about, you know, Zimmerman and the attorney and why the judge didn't do... I sent out, you know, a tweet to somebody who I thought could get me some information, and that's Joanne Reed of the Reed Report. And she responded in kind by letting me know that the judge did inform... the people as soon as she found out about that her husband's firm had something to do with the hiring of this attorney. So far, all of the attorneys in this case have been working pro bono, and so there isn't any real right now fee attached to this particular attorney. So he's kind of doing this on his own, so to speak. So I did get that feedback from her here since we've been on the call.
Ask Jema. That's right. You can follow her on Twitter. That's A-S-K-J-E-M-A. Again, that's Ask Jema. A-S-K-J-E-M-A. Okay, let's shift now the conversation about Oprah. Oprah's life class, or should I say Oprah's life class and master class. Now, you've been... of course, around a lot of celebrities, or should I say a lot of celebrities have been around you. You know, the commercial we talked about was Al Sharpton. You, of course, tweet Al a lot. You've been a part of Oprah's life class for the past couple of years, I guess the past couple of semesters, I should say. And you seem to really have taken a liking to the class. So why don't you give us the latest update on what the class was about last week and what's to come and things of that nature.
Oh, tonight's, last week she had T.D. Jakes on Sunday night for Next Chapter, as well as Monday night's Life Class. And T.D. Jakes spent some time talking about his book, which is entitled Let It Go, as well as making sure you're finding your passion and what your purpose is. And so a lot of times we really don't know what our passion is. We think we know because we're good at one thing, but we might not be good at another thing. And so we think that's what we're supposed to be doing for the rest of our lives. And so there's one thing that he said that I thought was interesting. He said, don't confuse talent with purpose. And it's because you're talented in an area doesn't mean that's your purpose in terms of what it is you're supposed to do with the rest of your life. And so he cautioned and told us to look outside of ourselves, excuse me, and to look for that thing that brings us the most joy. And chances are, you know, that's probably the thing that you should be doing. And so he spent a lot of time on that, and I think what it did for the audience was, you know, a lot of times you have these aha moments where you're like, well, dang, I am good at that, but that's not really what I like to do. So what is it that I like to do that I'm good at as well? And I mean, you may have to go back and take another class or, you know, expand your surroundings and expand your territory a little bit to get out of it what it is you want. A lot of times when we go into what we think is our passion and our purpose, we do it around the people that surround us the most. And sometimes those people are not the ones that's going to give you what it is you're looking for. And we can speak truth to power to that ourselves, Patrick, in terms of, what it is we try to accomplish on a weekly basis with current events and what we try to accomplish, you know, with our company Tailor Made. And so what we're finding a year and a half in is that, you know, we will have to expand our territory. We will have to expand our net a little further because some of those in our circle, they don't want this change. They don't want this information. They don't want to be any better than what they are now. And that's okay. We're not faulting them for that. But we have to go outside of what you're comfortable with in order to get out what it is you want to get out of something. And I think sometimes we don't do that enough. And so then he talked about the whole thing about forgiveness, which I think is a hard lesson because we confuse forgiveness with forgetting. And one thing that he said I thought was powerful is that forgiveness does not absolve the person of the wrong they did. So forgiving that person doesn't say that it was okay. That's not what the forgiveness is about. And I often think about a time I was struggling, you know, with my job in Colorado and was going through all sort of crazy things, and I decided I need to go seek some outside counsel because obviously the counsel I was giving myself wasn't quite working. So I went and saw a therapist, and we talked a lot about, you know, what was it that I wanted to see and then what was probably going to happen, because sometimes what we want is not what's going to really happen. And so I had to make peace with that. So what I wanted was for everybody to tell me that they were wrong about what they said about me and about what they did to me and about how they treated me. And he said to me, but if they never give you that, you still have to forgive them. And I thought that was the most asinine statement he could have said to me. So I was like, what do you mean? I said, I'm not forgiving them until they apologize. And he said, they may not ever apologize, but you still have to forgive. And that just shook me to my core because that wasn't quite what I wanted to hear. And then he reminded me from a spiritual level, and this was a regular counselor. This wasn't a person in my church or nothing. But he reminded me of my faith, and he said, well, how does Jesus fit into what you're talking about? Because you're saying you're not going to forgive the people until they apologize to you. Is that the standard that Jesus has with you? And I was like, whoa, hey, we wasn't talking about Jesus yet. And he was like, but you can't have him on some things and not have him on all. And I was like, okay. And so it took that conversation for me to really understand what that whole forgiveness thing about. And not one of the people ever apologized to me about what they did, about what they said. But because I was able to forgive them in spite of, I healed a lot faster, and I'm a much better person because of that experience, and because I decided to go ahead on and release it. See, when we hold on to those sorts of things, it holds us, not only are we holding on to it, but it's holding us down. It's baggage, and we don't realize how heavy that bag is and that we carry it into every relationship that we have. We carry it into every job that we go to. I mean, it would have been easy for me to walk into my next job or my next career carrying all this stuff with me that those people had done. But what I decided to do was to leave those people in Colorado. And when I decided to do the new thing that I was doing, I didn't take that with me. I took the experience with me. I took the lessons learned with me, but I didn't take the people and the anguish and the anger with me. See, forgiveness doesn't mean we forget what happened, and it doesn't mean that we let the person think that what they did wasn't wrong, but forgiveness means I am now at a place I can learn whatever I needed to learn from this. I need to learn it so I can take it with me to my next experience.
That is so awesome, because a lot of times we think that forgiveness affects the person, not ourselves. Because if we can hold on to that anger or that hatred or whatever that is, saying I'm not going to forgive them, it really affects us. It doesn't affect them at all. They go on about their business and can really care less in a lot of cases, because they don't have the same convictions that we do. And so by us holding on and not forgiving, we don't release it. They maintain that power over us because we refuse to even forgive them. So that was a powerful, powerful for lesson there. What else did they talk about on the show over last week?
Well, those were the two main things in terms of finding your purpose and your passion, and then, you know, the thing around forgiveness. And so tomorrow's class, on tomorrow evening, she's going to have her four people that she's talked with this whole semester. Iyanla Van Zandt, she'll have Bishop Jakes on, she'll have Tony Robbins on, and she'll have, I hope I say his name right, Deepak, I can't think his last name, but because I'm going to mess it up. I don't want to mess it up. But she's going to have those four top on there talking about forgiveness and talking about letting go and talking about, you know, letting go of fears. And that was something, that's something that I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that Tony Robbins talked a lot about in terms of letting go of your fears as well, and how we have to force ourselves to resist the fear. And if we resist the fear, then the faith that you have will carry you through the process. And then there was something else that he said, is that you can't sow and reap at the same time. You can't sow and reap at the same time. See, your reaping comes after you've sown something, after you've planted something, after you've let it, after you've nurtured it and it's grown. I mean, you don't plant tomatoes and then have tomatoes.
Right.
It takes time for the tomatoes to come. And so oftentimes we're in such a hurry to receive that we forget that there's a sowing process. And the sowing isn't just in the planting. It's in the nurturing. Once you put it in the ground, then what are you going to do? So you've told yourself and you wrote it down, you've made it plain, you've made your vision plain that you want to do whatever it is you want to do. Okay, now what? If it requires a second degree or a degree or some certifications, have you taken the steps to get those classes? Have you taken the steps to find out what's needed in your state, in your community, to make sure that you're going to be able to do what it is you want to do? You don't just plant the seed and then don't water it. It'll never grow that way. And you can stand there all day and say, I planted this seed, and where's my tomatoes? And then I'm going to say, did you water it? Did you pull the weeds away from around it? Did you go out and check to see if any animals had come up and ate your seed? Because your seed could not be there anymore, because somebody could have came and stole your seed. So unless you take the time, once you sow it and you plant it, to then check on it and nurture it and till to it and tend to it, then you can reap. But you can't reap and sow at the same time. It doesn't work that way. And I think, you know, that was pretty profound for me as well.
You know, that this microwave mentality that we have over the last decade or so, you know, we want everything right now. You know, and you put it so eloquently that, you know, once you plant the seed, and you don't get it right away, there's a time that has to elapse, right? And people forget about that time elapsing. They forget about, it says joy comes in the morning, which means some time has to pass. And so we forget about that time piece and all those things you talked about, the weeds and tending to it and separating the weed from the tare. All those things has to happen through this process of nourishing that a lot of times that we just don't want to wait for, because we have that microwave mentality. That is awesome. So so this week you said they got four people coming on,
mm-hmm.
and they're gonna do a recap of what they talked about over the last several weeks
over the
or
last month. Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. over the last month, and then mm-hmm. and you last week before that I guess was Iyanna was talking about what?
The week before that she was talking about letting things go as well and about forgiveness and about. Understanding, you know, the thing that was the most profound, and I actually mentioned this to my Bible study group at church on Wednesday night, probably the thing that stayed with me the most is when she talked about the overflowing of your cup and how what's on the inside of the cup is what's for you and that you share with the overflow of the cup. And so many times we do that the reverse in terms of we give away what's on the inside when the inside should be for us. And so if we fail to take care of ourselves, we're not going to have any overflow to give to anybody else. And it's not a part, and Oprah said, isn't that being selfish? And she was real clear in stating, no, it's not about being selfish. But if you don't have anything to give because you've given it all away, then you're not well. And I think so many times women, you know, we find ourselves in that space, in that area where we give and give and give, and yet we are so, and we wonder why we're so drained and we're so tired and we're so worn out. Well, that's because we've given away the thing that was for us. I've given away what was for me as opposed to giving away what was on the overflow of the cup. And that was just so profound to me. And when I mentioned that in Bible study, a lot of people was like, And a young lady came up to me today and said, I just want you to know, I told my brother what you said about that cup. She said, I got that. She said, that made sense to me. I got that.
Right,
I've been
right.
telling people about that all day. So that's good, you know, and I'm glad that I shared it because some get messages in different kinds of ways, and I want to be obedient, you know, to the Spirit. When it tells me to speak, I have to speak. And although what I said didn't have nothing to do with the lesson, but I had the audience there, and it said, "This is you go ahead and say that." And so, and it fell on fertile ground because it had touched somebody. And if it just touched one person, then I did what I was supposed to do. And that's what you learn in these different types of classes that she puts together.
So speaking of these types of classes. How does one get involved? Is it too late? Can I participate? How if I wanted to go right now and be a part of the next one, when is it and how do I get involved?
Okay, so there's two things you can do. You just go to Oprah.com and click on the tag that says Life Class. And once you click on that, it asks if you're not already a registered user of Oprah.com, it asks if you wanted to register. And then once you register, then you just check on Monday at 8 o'clock, I believe, 8 o'clock Central Time, you check in to the class when it's happening. If it's a live class, you can check in. If it's not live, then there's no checking in process. And you can either watch it on your own network or you can watch it online on Oprah.com. You can also go back, and look at classes from the week before. The life class generally has a series of questions, 1 of 3 questions, every week to prepare you for the next class. And so you can go and you can answer those questions. It's on a secure little thing, or you can write them down if you want, if you don't want to put them on the site. And so you do that during the class. It's interactive in terms of Facebook and Twitter. And so people are in the moment right then, sending their responses, and she reads some of them sometimes right there live on the spot in terms of what people are saying. And so it's a real interactive. For me, it's been, I'll say therapeutic, but more than anything, it's just been confirming, I guess is the word for me. It's been confirming in terms of some things that I've said I wanted to do, and why I haven't done them yet is there's no excuse. I keep making up excuses, but I really don't have any. I keep creating obstacles that aren't there, and so I have to now own this process. And for my seed to grow, I have to do more than talk about it, and I have to do more than wanting it to be. I have to nurture it as well. I have to take the next step if I'm going to do what it was I said I was going to do. And so it's been that type of thing for me personally.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, well, we're closing in on the end of the show. Let me get your final comments.
One other thing I want to make reference to, you had mentioned earlier about the whole voting thing and what's going on here in Dallas County and whether or not we're going to give voter registration cards. I did, once again, I'm telling you, the power of technology. I reached out to Freddie Haynes of Friendship West Baptist Church and simply asked him, you know, is this true? What's going on? And what he stated in my response was that we should be receiving our voter registration cards by April 25th. And so if there's a problem after that, then I think we need to kind of be on higher alert status. But I'm still going to call my people up here on the corner and ask them, you know, what's going on with our voter registration just for myself. But because it was such a something that I hadn't heard, and then when I asked another person, they were saying that their state representative had told them that as well. And so I was real kind of like edgy, because who is not going to give they vote away is me. And so I am adamant about it. And so I've reached out to different types of people that I think would have that information. And so just wanted to give an update on that. So in saying that, you know, in whatever state you're in, please be aware of whatever the changes are in your area. Make sure you know where your polling place is. If you have a primary coming up, go out and test the waters, so to speak, to ensure that you're on the list and that your addresses are correct and all things of that nature, because they're going to use anything they can to keep you from voting or have you vote provisional, which should be afforded to you. You ought to be able to vote provisional until they can disprove what you're saying. And so let's just be vigilant about it. Let's not sit back. This is not the time. Every pundit on TV from Dan Rather on is talking about how close of an election this is going to be, and how this is going to be one of the most expensive elections in the world, and all of those things. So we just want to make sure that we are equipped and that we have the knowledge, which is what we try to do on a weekly basis, is inform, so that we can all go out and make informed decisions.
Well, that's our show for today. I would like to thank all the listeners for tuning in. And, of course, a special thanks to my co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent, Jima Hill Cook. Now, don't forget to follow her on Twitter, and that's at AskJima, AskJema. And I also like to thank Mr. Motivator for tuning in today. You can check out his show, The Motivator Show. That's every Saturday at 5 p.m. Central Time. Dare to dream and keep thinking big. Now, you're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade Talk Radio, all one word, .blogspot.com. You're listening to the sounds of George Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, George.